So last week, we just started chapter 9 of the Bhagavad Gita. As we had mentioned last week also, the Bhagavad Gita is a gradual progression of knowledge. In the first chapter, we have the student who is Arjuna, his delusion, his grief, because he does not know what is his duty. And the teacher in the Bhagavad Gita is the Lord himself, Lord Krishna, and he gives the message starting from the second chapter about what is his duty. And in the third, about what is karma yoga, how to do your duty without attachment. In the fourth chapter, what is the yagna spirit, how we can all work together, sinking our individual differences for a higher cause. And in the fifth chapter, it's called karma sannyas, where even the sense of doership should go away. Even the fact that I have done something great, that should go away. It is the Lord that is working through me. And that is the message of not only the fifth chapter, but of the entire first few chapters where they talk about karma yoga or service. The sixth onward is the topic of meditation. And then the seventh, eighth, and ninth, in my opinion, is the highest knowledge as far as the knowledge is concerned, because it is the essence of the Upanishads. The Upanishads are the very ancient texts which give us the highest truth, but in a very symbolic, very suggestive language. It is very difficult to study the Upanishads unless you have a very qualified teacher. So this knowledge of the Upanishads has been simplified and made it easier for an average person like Arjuna, who was like us, you know, who was a man of the world, was a soldier, was a king, a warrior, but had studied the scriptures, had some knowledge. And so when he was under doubt, then this Bhagavad Gita was given to him to solve his doubts. And that is very, very important, because when we start studying the Bhagavad Gita, a lot of us make the mistake of reading it like a drama, like a play. Okay, there is a student who is deluded, and then there is a teacher, and the teacher is teaching the student, and after a while the student understands and his ignorance is gone. But that is not how we study the scriptures. The way you look at it is that I am Arjuna. I am that student who at this moment is deluded. I don't know what my duty is. I don't know what my goal in life is. How can I reach that goal of spiritual evolution? And the Lord in this Bhagavad Gita is talking to me. The instructions are meant for me. So every shloka, when you study every verse, every chapter, you apply that to your life, that how can I benefit from this knowledge? Is it useful to me or not? If it is useful, I use it. If not, I can discard the book and maybe read something else. So then only the study of the scriptures becomes valid when you do not study it like a play, that, you know, Jesus is talking to the, you know, people in the mount or giving the, but he's talking to me, you know. So that is the way you have to study the scriptures. So in the 7th, 8th, and 9th chapter, the knowledge gets a little more difficult. And we already did the 7th chapter, which talks about knowledge and wisdom. And then we just finished the 8th chapter, which talks about the imperishable Brahman, the Lord of the universe, that is the unmanifest, formless consciousness, how that form is indestructible, unchanging, and how we can reach him. So that is what, and this topic is continued in the 9th chapter, which is called the Royal Secret, the Royal Secret. And last week we had talked about it, and we'll talk about a little bit more of why this knowledge is considered a secret knowledge. Secret does not mean that it should be kept only to me and not shared with others, but what is the exact meaning of secret, we'll talk about that. So let's do verse number 2, chapter 9, verse number 2.
Raja-vidya-raja-guhyam pavitramidam-uttamam pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukham kartum avyayam.
Heading of this chapter is the royal secret. So he says it is Raja-vidya, it is royal knowledge. Raja-guhyam, it is a royal secret. Pavitram. Pavitram means it is a purifier. It will purify you, this knowledge. Idam, this knowledge, pavitram, it will purify you. And it is uttamam. Uttamam means the best, the highest. So like we say good, better and best. So uttamam is the highest. It is the best knowledge. Pratyakshavagamam. It is not something that will be only theoretical, you know, may or may not be valid. But it is something you can directly experience yourself. You know, some knowledges you may just have heard about, but you yourself have no experience. He says this knowledge you can experience yourself. Then he says it is dharmyam. It is according to dharma. It is according to righteousness. But it's not difficult. You know, a person might say, I've heard that this knowledge is so difficult and it is this self-realization is such a difficult path. He says, no. It is susukham. It is easy. Susukham kartum. It can be easily performed. And avyayam. Avyayam means imperishable, immutable, permanent, never changing. So every word needs some explanation. So we'll spend some time on this verse. So first one is, it is a rajvidya. It is a royal knowledge. Now why does he use the word royal knowledge and then rajaguhyam, royal secret? Because the moment something is said royal, it must be something special, you know. Like when they make a sale, they say this is a royal sheets, you know, or it is a king size bed. So anything, we are so fascinated with the word king or the word royal that we immediately go, this is the royal, you know, suite in the hotel. And that's the suite I want to stay in. Why? Because I feel special. So here, the teacher is talking to a student who is a king, who is a prince. And so when he tells him it is a royal knowledge, he says, yeah, I'm a prince, so it is for me. It is not for commoners. So it is a way to get the student interested. Whatever it takes to, because if it is something royal, then it is something special. But also the reason he calls it royal is because it is something which is higher, which is superior, which is better than the average knowledge. You know, there is some kind of knowledge. There is knowledge of physics and chemistry and biology and engineering and cooking and, you know, drama and art and tennis and golf. Those are all knowledges. But this knowledge of the scriptures, of who I am, who is God and what is my relationship, is the highest knowledge. It's called the Raja Vidya. And talking about knowledge reminds me of this little story. George Bernard Shaw was very famous for his intelligence and for his wit. And so one day he was crossing this little bridge, and it was so narrow. It was like a little wooden bridge across a river when only one person could cross. Two people couldn't cross. And if two people were walking, then one had to, you know, step aside or step back, or move over to one side and to give path to the other. So he's walking, George Bernard Shaw, and across comes this big wrestler, this big, heavy, strong guy, you know, and he's walking and the whole bridge is shaking. And he sees this little George Bernard Shaw, this little guy. He says, I don't give way for fools. So George Bernard Shaw looks at him and says, but I do. And he moved aside. So that is knowledge, you know, where you know how to use it, you know, where you use your knowledge. So he says it is a royal knowledge and it is a Raja Guhyam and it is the highest secret. Now, why is it a secret? People have misused the word secret where certain communities or certain group of people like the priests and all hold on to it. And they say this is not the knowledge to be given to everybody. Only the priest class is allowed to study it. Only they are allowed to teach others. It is only restricted to a few group of people. And sometimes some of the scriptures I have found in certain countries, especially in India and all, where they don't even publish them, they don't even distribute them, that they should only be kept in the temples. So whoever the masters wrote this knowledge, they did not write it with the idea that it is only for, you know, few people. Like when Jesus was talking to his disciples, he didn't say that this knowledge is only for you, but it is to be shared with the whole world. And that's how these prophets were. So when he says it is a royal secret, what is a secret? As we talked about, what I do not know is a secret. What I do not know is a secret. And a secret can only be told by a person who knows it. You know, if there is a secret and I don't know it and somebody else knows it, you say, oh, can you tell me the secret? And also sometimes the knowledge can only be given to a person who is qualified to receive it. Like say, you know, there is an elementary student, he's a fifth or sixth year old student, fifth or sixth grade student, and then you tell him, I'm going to teach you about quantum physics and advanced calculus, you know, and you start talking, no matter how wonderful the teacher may be, how great a mathematics professor, when he's talking to a student who is not ready, it will be a waste of the student's time and the teacher's time, and the student will either fall asleep or lose interest or never go back. So what he's saying is that this knowledge can be given to a person who is ready to get this knowledge. If you give it to a person who is not yet ready for this knowledge, then this knowledge will go over his head. So it says that to study the scriptures, you have to have some basic mental preparation. And one of the very important is to purify your mind. And how do we do that? It is given here very beautifully. How do I prepare myself from spiritual knowledge? This is from Raman Maharishi's Upadesh Sar. Upadesh Sar, this is a very beautiful verse where it says, Ishvara arpitam nechaya kritam chitta shodakam mukti. Ishvara arpitam nechaya kritam. Ishvara arpitam means dedicated to the Lord. So actions that are dedicated to the Lord, nechaya kritam, na icha means without selfishness. So actions performed unselfishly, dedicated to the Lord, chitta shodakam, they purify your mind, and mukti sadakam, and they become aids to liberation. So I have to purify my mind before I can really benefit. I mean, I can read the scriptures, I can study it, I can listen to teachers, but to get the whole benefit of this knowledge, my mind has to be purified. And what do we mean by a pure mind? What we mean by a pure mind is the mind that is unselfish, that is dedicated to the Lord, that loves everybody as a manifestation of the Lord, and also who has done some preparatory reading, some preparatory studying. That's why we say the Gita, even though we are the ninth chapter, you should at least have some knowledge of the previous chapters, and a lot of you have these books. So even if you have started, say, in the last few weeks or today, it is a good idea when you have time to start from the beginning and read the Bhagavad Gita so that your mind is ready. So that is called preparation. So then this knowledge will be more easily understood and more easily applied. Then it says pavitram. It is a purifier. This knowledge purifies your mind. And we said you need a purity of mind. So what do we mean by impure mind? So just to come back to this chart, what is an impure mind? An impure mind is a mind that is full of vasanas, full of selfishness, full of selfish tendencies. So a person whose mind is full of selfishness, full of anger, hatred, jealousy, greed, full of these negative tendencies, slowly the mind has to be purified. You know, where there is anger, remember the prayer of Saint Francis, where there is anger, let me sow love. Where there is jealousy, let me have compassion. So slowly my negatives have to be removed and positive tendencies have to be instituted. And this knowledge is a great purifier, because once you have understood who you are, what am I? I am this consciousness. I am not this body, which he will explain in the next few verses. Once you have understood, then very quickly your negative tendencies disappear. The vasanas get burnt in the knowledge. Also, people who meditate, they say if you meditate correctly and properly, it is a very beautiful way to dissolve your vasanas, your tendencies, and purify your mind. So the mind can be purified by serving the Lord with your body, by loving Him with your mind, and by learning about Him with your intellect. So when all your tendencies, your body is serving, your mind is loving, your intellect is studying and knowing about Him, and your desires are slowly being purified, then the Lord that is in my heart very quickly becomes available to me to be known. So that's why they say this knowledge is pavitram. It purifies you. It makes your mind pure. And then Uttamam, we already talked about it. It is the highest knowledge and it is the knowledge of the highest. It is not only the highest knowledge, but tells me who is the highest. The highest, of course, is the Lord, the consciousness, the Brahman that is all pervading, that is everywhere. And that can be called, you know, in by you can call him Krishna or Buddha or Jesus or Father in Heaven or Allah or Shiva. But it is that one consciousness that is also in my heart as the highest, as the life or the consciousness. So this knowledge tells me about me, myself. It does not tell me about how to become a better engineer or a better teacher or how to become a better, you know, businessman, but how to become a better individual. How can I make myself better, purify my thoughts, purify my action, and make myself a better individual? So that's why this says it is a knowledge about you. And it is a knowledge that will make you a better individual if you apply that in your life. If you don't, then obviously it is not going to benefit you. Then it says, pratyakshavagamam. It is something that is very obvious, very simple, and you can easily experience it yourself. A lot of times we find that people read the scriptures and say, you know, it was okay for Jesus to say that 2,000 years ago, but I don't think this knowledge is useful right now. He was talking to the people, or you know, Krishna was talking to Arjuna 5,000 years ago, or these Upanishads were. I don't think that in the modern age with all this warfare and all this jealousy and all this violence, and I don't think the scriptures are valid. So we doubt the scriptures, but they say that these scriptures are as valid today as they were 2,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, 8,000 years ago. And it is something you can experience for yourself. Initially, you start out by saying, okay, the teacher is telling me this. So it is the teacher's knowledge. Like when we are studying, we are reading Swami Chinmayananda's commentary. So you say it is Swami Chinmayananda's knowledge, which I am listening. But then now I have to make that knowledge my knowledge so that this experience becomes my experience. It's like somebody has told you the fire is hot and will burn you, like a child. You know, if the child doesn't listen, no matter how much the mother will say, don't go near the fire. You know, children are curious, especially it's something shiny and red and yellow and it looks good. So he'll go put his hand in there. Why? Because he wants to, at the moment, his hand burns, he starts crying. Next time he won't. Pratyakshavagamam. He has experienced it. He has seen it. And next time, you know, no matter how much, he knows he's very smart. He's not, again, next time not going to go, he's put his finger in the fire. So that's why they say this knowledge is something that you can experience it and then you will be convinced about it. This is called pratyaksha. And then there are certain knowledges called anuman. Like somebody tells you, do you know potassium cyanide is a poison? You say, I don't. I know. How do you know? Have you tasted it? They say, no. I don't need to taste potassium cyanide to be told it's a poison. I have been told by the, you know, by the people who know it. Or I have seen, you know, people die from it. Or, you know, it is described in the novels as a way to murder people and all. So that is called anuman, where you have heard from somebody and you say, that's fine, I don't need to experience that. You know, I don't need to find out that potassium cyanide is a poison. But this knowledge is something that you have to experience for yourself, only then you will get the benefit of it. It's like Tylenol. You have heard about Tylenol can bring down the fever and cure a headache. But when you take the Tylenol, then your headache goes away, your fever comes down. You say, yeah, that's true. Acetaminophen does bring down. So this is that you yourself can experience it. Then it says it is dharmyam. Dharmyam means according to dharma. Now the word dharma has a lot of meanings. Actually, they say if you open a Sanskrit dictionary and you take out the word dharma, it will have two columns of meanings of dharma, and then it will at the bottom it will say etc., etc., etc. There are so many meanings of the word dharma, but I'll just mention two or three, but I'll also mention the one where it is used. One, of course, dharma is that it is like it is a religion, you know, like Hindu dharma or Islam dharma or Isai dharma, so it is a Christian faith or the Hindu faith. Dharma also means duty. You know, ye mera dharma hai, like it is my duty. Like if you are in a childhood, you know, your duty is to study. Then if you are in the grahastha ashram, then your dharma is to take care of the family, have children. If you are in the retired phase, then, you know, vanaprastha and sannyas, then your duty is to, you know, retire and, you know, and turn your mind towards the higher and all. So each station in life has its duty. Each job has its duty. Like a teacher's duty is different from an engineer's duty, from a doctor's duty. If an engineer starts doing a teacher's job or a doctor's job, he won't be successful. But here, the word dharma is used as, it is my essential nature. What I really am, that is the word dharma here. What is the essential nature? Like to give an example. Now, what is the dharma of sugar? What is the essential nature of sugar? Sweetness. Right? If something is not sweet, you won't call it sugar. Like in India, we buy that alum, you know, patkari that they use to shave. They use it as an antiseptic. They put it in the shaving water so that, you know, when you get nicks and cuts, it heals it. Now, this alum is crystalline and looks exactly like sugar. It looks perfectly like the raw sugar. But if you put it in the mouth, it's so bitter that you say, oh my God, this cannot be sugar. Even though it looks like sugar, it's not sugar. Why? Because it's not sweet. Or sometimes you go to somebody's house and they have these artificial flowers. Oh my God, they look so pretty. They look even better than the real rose. But then you go smell it and it has no fragrance. It does not have the perfume. And you say, it can't be a real flower, because the essential nature of flower is fragrance. If there is no fragrance, it's not a flower. Or you go to somebody's house, they have these false fires, you know, where they make noise like fire and they even look like fire. But they don't produce any heat. You know, you open that and it is just a fake fire. So you say, this cannot be real. Because the essential nature of fire is heat. So just as sugar without sweetness, or flour without fragrance, or fire without heat cannot be called fire or sugar. So similarly, what is my essential nature? What is it that makes me what I am? And people say, it is this body. No, the body is not. Body is an instrument, because I say my body. So the moment I say my body, that means I am the owner of this body. Like when I say my watch or my car, then I become the owner of this car. So when I say my body, that means I am not the body, I am the owner of this body. How about my mind, my emotions and my thoughts? No, they are not me either, because I can watch them. My mind is very upset. My ideas are confused, my thoughts. So anything that I can watch, I am not. So, which we will study more in this chapter next week. They say, I am that consciousness. That is my essential nature. And every human being, every creature on this earth, we are nothing but that one consciousness playing different roles. And, you know, somebody is a man, somebody is a woman, somebody is an engineer, somebody is a doctor, somebody is a cat, somebody is a dog, somebody is a plant, somebody is a fish, somebody is a bird. But all of them are nothing but that one consciousness playing different roles. So this knowledge tells me about who I really am. So it tells me about my nature. That's why it is dharmyam. It is telling me who I really am. And not knowing that, my knowledge is incomplete. That's why it says dharmyam. And this will be explained more in the next week. Then it says susukham kartum. It can be easily performed. You know, some people say, God realization is so difficult. And then in our Puranas, they talk about stories about these rishis who sat for so many years in the Himalayas, you know, cross-legged, or somebody stood on one leg in heat and cold, and for years, usne kitne saal tapasya ki, so many years of tapas he did. And so we say, oh my God, this is very hard, and I don't have time. I have children to take care of. I have my job. I have my family. I have all my other things. Where am I going to find time to go in the Himalayas and sit for years, you know, under the tree with my legs folded? Sorry, maybe next lifetime. See, Hindus, we have a very convenient excuse. You know, I'll do it next lifetime. At least Christians don't even have that. I have only this lifetime to do it. So it's better, you know, at least we can say, it's okay, our ugly life mein karein. So, but they say, no, it's not that difficult. It's not that difficult. It is susukham kartum. Why is it easy? Why does Krishna say it is easy? Because it is you. It is about you yourself. I am telling you about you. And when I hear, oh, it's about me, then I always want to hear. Like, you know, when we are looking at wedding pictures, and there might be hundreds of pictures of the bride and the groom, but one picture where I am, oh, I am here. You know, we immediately focus on that picture, you know, in that whole group. Why? Because it is about me. It is my picture. So it is human nature to know about me, myself. So here he says, I am talking to you about you. Not you as this body, not you as this individuality, but you as the consciousness. And that is who you really are. So it is something about me, myself, and it is not something far away. You know, if it was a knowledge about, you know, Russia, about the steppes of Russia, you know, I have never been there. I heard it's so cold. I might never go there. And to go there, I have to get a visa, and then I have to know the language, and oh my God, and how am I? Or if it's a knowledge about quantum physics or about Einstein's theories of, you know, all these, those are very difficult. You know, I have to first study physics, and then I have to be a graduate, and then I have to do a master's, and then a PhD, and then maybe I can study about quantum physics. So he says, this is not something that is outside, but it is you yourself, and it is the life principle within you. It is the consciousness. It is that which makes you hear, that which makes you see, that which makes you talk, that which makes you walk, that which makes you think. So it is that life principle. The same thing we are doing in our Thursday class where we are talking about Dakshinamurti. It is the same. The Lord within, who is the source of all the energy, of the source of all the activities. So it is not something outside. You just have to turn inwards. And avyayam. And the very important fact is that this knowledge is permanent. It is imperishable. It is never changing. And it is true. You know, this scriptures that were written 5,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago or 8,000 years ago, even today, they have been preserved in the exact way that Jesus spoke or Krishna spoke or Buddha spoke. The knowledge has been preserved and the knowledge is still worshipped. It is still relevant. You know, it is still preached in all the temples and churches and mosques. Why? Because this knowledge is permanent, unchanging, imperishable, and never can go out of style. You know, clothes may go out of style. They used to wear huge bell bottom and have long whiskers. And now, you know, people, so the fashions change, the clothes change, the style, you know, of houses change. They used to be Mediterranean, two-door, and now there are more modern and straight houses. But this knowledge is avyayam. This knowledge is imperishable. It is permanent. Why? Because it tells you about that Lord who is permanent. See, they say God is permanent. He was there even before this world was there. He was alone. And then the Bible says he created the world in 6 days and then the seventh day he rested. So that Lord who was always there, who created this world, and then when the world ends, you know, they talk about pralay or they talk about the deluge in the Bible or in the Puranas they talk about pralay. When this world ends and merges into that Lord, that consciousness, he will still be there. And I as the consciousness will always be there. That is the important point. This body may perish, this mind may change, these ideas may change, but this consciousness will always be the same. So it is the knowledge of the permanent. It is not the knowledge of the temporary. The knowledge of the temporary can change. Like people used to believe the earth is flat. Now they know the earth is round. Now they are even changing the, what are those? The Gemini and all. What do they call them? The zodiacs. Yeah, that's all changing. The person says, oh, I used to be a Cancer. Now I am a Gemini. Oh my God, you know, and all those books are becoming useless. So, you know, this knowledge keeps on changing. But this knowledge of who you are and who is God will be permanent. That's why this knowledge is very important and very beneficial. So that is the essence of this very beautiful shloka.
Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhavave. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.